Well, we are looking at the series, God and the Skeptics. By my count, God's winning. Part two, seven reasons for faith. We saw seven reasons to discount, to refute the skeptics. Now seven positive reasons. The second one, the innate knowledge of God. It's an interesting situation to realize that so many of the skeptics, so many of the liberals, so many of the unbelievers are actually standing firmly on Christian principles while they attack Christian principles. It's one of those strange things that they are not consistent with their own philosophy. They stand on our foundation because it's the only way to live. It's just too odd. There we go. Romans 1:19. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. The reason for faith, this reasoning is sometimes called the argument from morality. Asking the question is, so where did morality come from if everything is just all chaos and we're built by accident? The other is called the anthropological argument. That is, anthropos, the word man, is the study of man says that he's a moral being, not Christian, but moral. They may have weird morals, but they have morals nonetheless. And in many cases, just minor differences all across the world and throughout all time. Two claims. Let's look first of all at the Bible claim. The Bible claims that there is a God outside of time and space who created the universe of time and space. It claims that God made everything very good, but something happened that changed all that. The first human sinned, and a curse came over the universe. Death and death-causing conditions spread over the whole world. Decay, the relentless path to death, became the law of the universe. God went to extraordinary lengths to rescue man from the cursed world because he had created man for loving fellowship with him. He has proclaimed, for instance, that murder is wrong because of this special purpose of man's creation, that we are created in God's image. That is what the Bible claims. The other claim is that of secular humanism with its evolutionary philosophy. It claims that animals and man evolved from one-celled creatures. It claims that man is just another kind of animal, like a tiger is just different from a jellyfish. Man, it says, is no better than other animals, even though he is smarter. Some of the man animals, us, have developed rules based on their culture. Others have developed very different rules based on their very different culture. And so secular humanism says if the morality is different, these differences should be respected and should be appreciated. That is what secularism claims. So we want to look at this. The problem that we see with their thinking is that the conscience is the organ of, it's a rough road, Grandma. There we go. Think of what the conscience is. Conscience is a strange little thing we have hiding down inside of us. It is the organ of moral obligation. It's the thing that says you ought to and you shouldn't have. You ought to do this, you ought not to do that. And it's found in all men everywhere. Timothy Keller, in his 20 years of ministry in super liberal New York City, found that the young adults he has met have a strong sense of right and wrong. They have a moral outrage over many things that are happening in our world. Now, let us be clear, these are not the people that are members of his church. These are the unsaved, secular people of the city. This condition that they are in, this moral outrage that they have, this isn't being claimed by the Bible. This isn't the claim of secularism. It's just the way of life on earth. This is the way things really are. This is the way people exist. It's how they live. So the problem is this: how can we account for this sense of moral obligation? Where does that come from? What is moral obligation? Well, sociologist Christian Smith says moral is an orientation toward understandings about what is right and wrong, just and unjust. And these understandings are not established by our own actual desires or preferences. The morality says it isn't, I just like this and I don't like that. Rather, instead, they are believed to exist apart from our desires. They are rules that are outside our particular preferences, providing standards by which our desires and our preferences can themselves be judged. So not just our preferences, rather it's a set of rules of right and wrong, just and unjust, by which our preferences can be judged. So that's what moral obligation is. That's what morality we're talking about. So, if anyone is asked to talk about something he believes is really very wrong, in your gospel conversation with people, you could ask them, do you believe that something is going on here or around the world that is actually very wrong? These people are able to name one or more terrible things. The more you read, the more you know, the more you can list these things. These will be things that this person, unsaved as he might be, that he considers wrong, even though some dictators, some cultures practiced them. This universal characteristic of man is hard to explain from the secularist point of view. How is it that they can come up that universally, through time and all geography, and come up with the idea that there is a right and wrong that ought not to be violated? Well, let me give you several secular explanations. Number one, moral altruism comes from a gene passed from ancestors who survived in greater numbers. This is your normal evolutionary thought. Whatever we have today has come to us because it was helpful for survival. Well, that doesn't make much sense. The survival of the fittest teaches that survival passes on its genes of success. So better eyesight, better hearing, so on, that type of thing. The less fit a being is, the more likely he will die and not pass on his genetic code. So the weakling dies, the strong survives, and the descendants get his genes, Levi's, whatever you want. So the immediate question comes to mind, how could altruistic behavior, do you know the word altruistic? It's being kind, being nice, it's helping somebody out, helping them out of trouble, altruistic.
And not getting money for it.
Doing it for the sake of helping. How could altruistic behavior contribute to survival? A sense of moral obligation must limit a creature's actions to those perceived as good, while the creature with no moral limitations is free to do anything to survive. So one sounds more survivable. The one is limited in the violence he's willing to do. The other is unlimited. So it sounds like that would be the one that got away with it and therefore lived and therefore passed on his violent genes. So they come back and they say, well, it's argued that moral altruism gene assisted a tribe to survive by the willing sacrifice of individuals. This doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's logical to say that, but it doesn't explain our problem, because the scientific consensus is that natural selection does not work on whole populations, but only on individuals. You can't have a lot of heroic, altruistic people who died, and somehow their genes are carried on in the tribe. You see, the fact that you have the moral gene person sacrificing himself for the tribe. So what happened to his genes? They died out. You have all the cowardly gene people being saved, not willing to step forward. They're the ones who survived. Only those who did not sacrifice themselves lived to pass on their genes. So it is argued that the moral gene brought indirect survival benefits from the ones being helped. But this does not explain present-day motivation to help when no one knows about it. So this evolutionary explanation fails. Secular explanation number two. The sense of right and wrong is true only for the culture that evolved it. This argument claims moral obligation did not come from biological evolution, but from cultural evolution. The daring swimsuits of the 1800s are today laughably decent. Those long legs on the girls. So morality is as relative as my very sincere belief that my wife and my mother make the best potato salad. You know, it's just my feeling, the way I think about it. And they think that's what all morality is all about. The basic problem with this argument is you can say that's true, but nobody can live that way. No one can live consistently that way. Anthropologist Carol Fleur Loban was a committed cultural relativism person, just what we've described. Morality came from our ancestors by our particular culture. Really means nothing. There is no overall morality. That's what she said she believed. But she had to come to the place where she believed that her cultural relativism was not as important as protecting human rights, and especially women's rights. Her problem was that even though she believed, that equality for women came from Northern Europe in the 18th century, she felt she had to teach other cultures the same thing. Now, this is saying it came from my background, therefore I ought to say that's just for me. But she felt she ought to try to impose that on others. So in spite of her philosophy, she knew her beliefs were just better than others. This culture is better, she says, where women are protected. The concept of human rights teaches that every human has inherent dignity and that others must order their lives according to that fact. It's the idea I have the freedom to swing my arms wherever I want, but my freedom ends where your nose begins. You see? So, human rights, every human has inherent dignity. Others must order their lives according to that fact. But to assert this as true gives no proof or any reason to accept it. See? Humanity has its dignity. Nobody should take that dignity away. Prove it. Why do you say that? Show me your arguments. See. On the basis of cultural relativism, which is what we're saying, just developed in a certain culture, how can we condemn racial genocide of the Nazis? Look, just because we wouldn't do it, why should we condemn them for doing it? See? So this argument fails because no action can be condemned outside its own culture. Yet, how do people live? Mankind knows certain things are just wrong. Secular explanation number three. The concept of human rights are bestowed by the vote of the majority. Now, this sounds kind of interesting until you stop to think about it. The flaw in the theory is shown by the fact that human rights demands the right of a man to speak even if his words are not in the general interest. In other words, where's the rights of the minority if human rights are only secured by majority vote? Doesn't that mean that most of us Germans can vote to exterminate the Jews, you see? That would be okay then. So, will we bow to the majority's decision to exterminate the minority? Puts us back with Nazi Germany. The argument fails because even if a majority will claim something is moral or immoral, it gives no right to oppress a minority, even if the minority is only one person. The majority of the Ku Klux Klanners hanging a black man for supposed crimes, we look upon that today and say that was just wrong. And then secular explanation number four. Just forget explaining and accept the fact there is no morality. Stop coddling everybody. This philosophy demands we accept and live by the standard of nature. You know, on the playground, somebody tells the bully to stop torturing the younger boy. And he asks, belligerently, says who? You gonna make me? Who has the right to make him stop? Well, we're gonna call a teacher to make him stop. And so we understand that the teacher is bigger and stronger, and he will make the rules. So might makes right. Whoever has the strength will say what is right and what is wrong. Is this really where we want to live? Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, He proclaimed that man had outgrown the need for the concept of God. He said, God is dead. He didn't really believe there was a God who died, took ill, and died. He was saying that this evolutionary awe-struck concept of a God was no longer necessary. So, but then he said this, if God is dead, all morality based on love is groundless. He was saying, let's be consistent. Nietzsche and Jean-Paul Charles Amard Sartre argued that there is now no good reason to be kind, no good reason to be loving, no good reason to work for peace. He says you can't get rid of the Christian God and hold on to Christian morality. When writer Annie Dillard, I've told this story several times, Annie Dillard lived for a year by a creek in the mountains of Virginia. She expected to get close to nature and be inspired. Instead, she observed that nature is dominated by the principle of violence by the strong against the weak. She wrote, "There is not a person in the world that behaves as badly as praying mantises." Mantis is the old Greek for prophet, a praying prophet. She wondered if nature is wrong and only humans are right, or if nature is right and humans are freaks who rage against the way things really are. So, conclusion. Are we then to abandon civilization? Urge every person to hide behind a tree and shoot at everybody else? No civilization at all? Are we to conspire to oppress others that we may rule in luxury? If we steal from them, we will have more. That will be good for us, good for our family. You see, the question, you say, well, no, we shouldn't do that. And my question is, why not? See, let's get down to it. Why not? Why not do that? Why try to prove yourself good or better than others when there's no one on the judge's bench? Nobody's going to find out. Nobody's going to take you to task for it. If you can get away with it here, you got away with it. The bumper sticker, he who dies with the most toys wins. From the secularist point of view, there is no reason. Nature is violence. It is actually a dog-eat-dog world. Why is it that we humans cannot live like this? Why do we have moral outrage over the evils of the world? It's because the secular philosophy is wrong. Change the premise. These things are not correct. The Bible explains it. God hath showed it unto them. There is an innate knowledge of God and his correct ways. It's in the heart of every man. God said, be ye holy, for I am holy. And the fact is, you can say to anyone you talk to, you know this to be true in your heart, because God put it there. So, let's take courage, you see. These people, very often the liberals are the ones really talking about how bad things are and how people ought to change and all of this. And you say, it's interesting that you're that interested in the wrongs of others while you're defending wrongs by you and the people that you like. What is your basis for this? and they'll give you one of these. None of these work very well. If evolution is true in the philosophy, when evolution is true, there can be no moral standard. We are biological accidents caused by chaos. Where does morality fit into that? So secular humanism and an evolutionary philosophy has no moral basis. Their moral outrage, all borrowed from us, all borrowed from a God who says there is right, there is wrong, there is an ultimate standard. Comments or questions?